This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Just when you thought, maybe something will change. Maybe this time around, we'll get an accurate medical examiner's report in the death of Ellen Greenberg. And then you realize the city of Philadelphia was in charge. Well, that worked out well. We are looking now at the new medical examiner's report on the death of Ellen Greenberg. It has been released, a report that 14 years somehow manages to say everything and explain nothing. Dr. Lindsay Simon, the chief medical examiner for Philadelphia, has now reaffirmed the ruling of suicide.
Shut up. Just shut up. I'm leaving. I don't want to be part of this.
True story. It happened.
How yeah. the F is this even possible? Oh, I'm.
Yeah.
I'm outraged again. Here I go.
They've reaffirmed it even after more than 20 stab wounds. Well, actually, they've upped the stab wounds this time, 23.
Shut up again.
So let's continue to work against ourselves. You know, conflicting evidence, years of public outrage. But here's the catch. This so-called independent review, it wasn't independent at all. It came from the same office that ruled it a suicide in the first place. The same office now being sued by Ellen's family. And somehow it conveniently clears itself of any wrongdoing. So we're asking the tough questions, the legal questions, the ones the city doesn't seem eager to answer. Bob Mata, host of Defense Diaries, here to break it down, what this report really means, how the system protects itself, and whether justice for Ellen Greenberg just got buried again. We were texting yesterday afternoon when we heard it came out. I'm like, who has it? Do you have it? I have it. Do you? Like, who could find it first?
Yeah,
find
Tony the review. Won. Tony won for the record. Tony got it first. Within minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tony's good. It. He can find anything. So
guys, yeah. Fucking digger, man. You know?
You had a chance to dig into this thing yesterday. You got, obviously, you're of the legal mindset. I'm of the I host podcast mindset. So you have a little more insight into these sort of things. Bob, just overall, you know, when you saw this thing and you first had a chance to sink your teeth into it, what was your reaction?
My initial reaction, having in my lawyer career prior to becoming a podcaster myself, I looked at many, many, many autopsy reports. And, you know, one of the things I'm always saying on my show that I think that people, it kind of like goes over their head a little bit, not to speak to their intelligence level at all, but just kind of their experience in doing this kind of shit, is that anytime you have an autopsy in what could be a crime scene, the cops are there, all right? And the cops are there feeding information to the medical examiner, okay, in terms of factual evidence that they found at the scene. But with that comes their tunnel vision if they've formed it.
Yeah.
So if whatever they've landed on in terms of cause of death or how this might have gone down or potential perpetrator – they're coming into the ME's office with it. So when I read this one, the first thing I thought is, God damn, this reads like a police report more than a medical examiner's report. It does. It is so heavy, fact laden in terms of what the cops construe what happened that you can't not see that. Like there's more kind of police report information in here than there is actual medical findings, in my estimation. I mean, it's lengthy. It's 32 pages long. And there is the entire theory of the police department in here, you know, in terms of what happened. And they're stuck on this suicide finding. You know, why we could have hours of conversation on, you know, I don't get it, man. You know, and before this came out, I watched the most recent, I think it was Hulu. It's one of the big streamers.
Death in Apartment.
623 or whatever it is.
Yep.
You know, and I walked away with the same feeling, like this doesn't feel at all like a suicide.
No.
You know, and that was with, I thought that that was pretty even handed in terms of, you know, Ellen was having some mental health issues. There's no question about that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, but just the way this thing went down. And once again, we have an awful police investigation. That always seems to be the running theme of these cases where we're all outraged on one side or another because there's just so many gaping holes in the police investigation. And this is a prime example of that. I mean, the fact that they not only allowed for but advised the apartment manager to hire a fucking professional crime scene cleaning company come in and scour that fucking place is like beyond me.
Who says that? I mean, like, how often is that? You know, I mean, obviously, people don't maybe realize this, but after the scene is done, it's up to you to clean up your space. Yeah. The police don't do that for you.
Right.
So there usually is a point in time to which we know these guys, they do this, but the time and place is important. It's not usually while the body is still on the ground.
Yeah. Or hasn't been autopsied.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like, literally still the active scene, but they never looked at it. And this is what just gets me from the get-go. How on earth would you not look at this thing as a crime scene from the beginning? They mm-hmm. solely seem to base this only on the fiance saying the door was locked from the inside. Oh, can't be a crime.
Right. And the misinformation that they get from the fiance.
Right.
Regarding the doorman walking him up back to the apartment.
Yeah.
And you know, which
because
didn't
God
happen.
Knows it's never the other person in the relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, so it's just, it's confounding, really. And it's, you know, I mean, obviously for the Greenberg family, I feel terrible. You know, they've been going through it forever on this thing, man, fighting and fighting and fighting for justice for their daughter and what they construe to be justice. And it's really, really sad. Cause I mean, here's the bottom line, man, like no matter which way they come down on this ME's report, the evidence that was lost is lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you'll never be able to get that evidence in your all. Like, I would think if there was an honest, you know, true blue prosecutor, white hat wearing prosecutor that was like, look, I've looked at this thing, man, and I've come down on the side of this is not a suicide, you know, that they could probably get another independent, truly independent autopsy done. You know, the problem is with this thing, Tony, they're not even looking at the body anymore.
No.
Well, but here's what gets me. Yes, they lost a lot of evidence. They didn't. This was a really botched crime scene.
They didn't collect evidence. They didn't treat it as a crime scene.
Right, exactly. But what they did have and what they do have are descriptions of her stab wounds in places that she cannot physically reach. I mean, I feel like CSI Miami or something, Philadelphia, needs to come in here and do an actual episode on this. I don't know how much more we have to do on this, really. It's absurd. There's no way this woman did this to herself.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the evidence.
I think if we were to like use AI to look up like what is the average of women that commit suicide do it by ultimately stabbing themselves in the heart?
Siobhan talked about that, her psychotherapist. She said hardly any.
Right. No one does it like that.
No.
It's a wrist split.
No,
women don't do it like that. You know, I mean, that is a brutal way to kill yourself. And, you know, I mean, most women are going to pop pills, you know, maybe they'll do the gas in the car thing, you know, but it like to do it this way is just bizarre, man.
And Todd's got the pictures up of basically a skeleton of, you know,
This is the chart that shows where the stab wounds were, how
there's
deep
no
they
way.
Were.
The trajectory, the a big long, is that a steak knife?
It looks like a steak knife, which is probably about a 5-inch blade.
Yeah,
right?
There's no way she could have gotten back so far behind her head to insert that at the base of her skull properly.
How deep did N go in? Do we know?
It hit the spinal cord, and that's the cut that everyone has been arguing and saying. You couldn't have continued after that.
Nope.
Because you would have been incapacitated.
Correct.
But the new, this is a new addition to the report that came out just the other day. They're saying, well, that might have been the original autopsy. Maybe they dug a little too deep, basically. Maybe they might have accidentally severed a little bit more than they intended to when they were doing the examination.
Wow.
That's the excuse.
So they're inept is what they're saying.
Basically.
That's what I'm saying. When you go in initially and they're performing the initial autopsy and you've got a cop or two in there and they're sitting there saying, well, you know, like they're giving the ME the information that they had the door bar lock thing on, you know, the thing that swings over, and you know, that they had that the boyfriend was escorted up by the, you know, the guy downstairs, the doorman. And, you know, in their mind, this thing's open and shut. There could have been there's no one else that could have been in that apartment. You know, there's no way that he would have done this beforehand, you know,
simply based on one person's account. It's insane. It's like saying, well, Brian Koberger says he was stargazing. Couldn't have been him.
Okay, case over. We're good.
All right. Well, I'm glad
everybody
we're going to
go
work.
Home.
Can we handle all cases like that going forward in Philadelphia? If somebody just says, well, nope, you're wrong. I wasn't there. Oh, well, I'm glad you cleared that up.
Right.
I mean, that's how this is handled.
The reality is that's almost how all of them are handled. You know what I mean? Which always leads me to the question in this particular case, because you have some suspicious behavior from the fiance's family, not necessarily him at the time, but we can obviously get into the discussion about the 911 call, which is strange to say the least. But, you know, the fact that they got the uncle coming back to the apartment and taking all of the electronics is a big issue, you know, especially in a time when we glean so much from people's devices.
Mm-hmm.
It's very suspicious.
Do you think an attorney might know that those are very important objects that might have very important information on them? And if they're in the hands of someone that shouldn't be seeing them or they don't want to see them, could look rather incriminating.
Yeah.
And he was there under the guise of, oh, I need to get some stuff for the funeral. Okay, that's usually like artifacts of their stuff. Like, did you go get like her, like little figurines she liked, a favorite dress, you know, some pictures
maybe
on the
her
wall?
Makeup.
Yeah, perfume, something. No, you took all of her digital devices. And then what did you show up to the funeral with off those digital devices, which I'm going to take a wild guess and say you probably didn't have the passwords to, being the uncle that really wasn't very involved with Ellen in any way, shape, or form, but you're the one going in and taking this shit?
Right. It's weird, man.
Explain.
Doesn't
this scream of, and I want to say the fiance has not been charged.
No.
Let's throw that out there.
No.
But doesn't this scream of somebody is covering something up somewhere? I mean, this just big neon sign going, cover up. There's no way. I will go to my grave saying that this woman did not off herself. Period.
Yeah.
I think there's two ways of looking at it, though, too. Like, what is the cover-up on here? I mean, is this... Because there's ways you could look at this. Is it a cover-up in terms of the law enforcement realizing, wow, we really dropped the ball, and just saying, oh, it was a snowstorm and we were short-staffed? That's probably not going to hold up very well long-term. But that is why we were shitty at this to begin with. But that's not going to look good, so we're going to get sued, so we're just going to keep going down this path. Is it all to cover up incompetence? Is it to cover up a murder? I mean, that they know who committed it, and it's a favor for someone there at the scene? That's easy to go to. It seems to make the best movie of the week, although we don't know at the end of the day. There's a lot of weird, suspicious behavior, but that, again, there can be weird, suspicious behavior, and that's just how it looks. We've never had a way to parse all this out in any sort of trial form or investigation form. And at the same point, too, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here for the Sam, is if you had nothing to do with this, let's just, yeah, I mean, because that's how it says right now. That's right. How the world is. Yep. It's that he had absolutely nothing to do with this. If you had absolutely nothing to do with this and the investigators are not looking at you, I'm not going to raise my fucking hand.
Right.
And be like, dig into me more. Because how many people get wrongfully convicted when they didn't have anything to do with it? And you may be sitting there going, this evidence looks really bad. Like, I would easily be the person that they're going to say did this, even though I didn't. And they seem to, like, not be looking at me. So let them go and fuck up over here, and I'm just going to go over this way and be quiet and continue on with my life, which he did.
Yeah.
And he may be 1,000% innocent, and because he's never been charged, and that may just been a complete stroke of dumb luck for him that when it comes to discussing this and parsing this out does look rather odd. But at the same point, if you're looking at it from that perspective, makes total complete sense.
Right.
But the only other part you would say is, I do want to find who killed my fiance if she was murdered. But at the same point, you may be also telling yourself, I don't think my fiance would want me to spend the rest of my life in prison for a murder I didn't commit.
Right.
Because that's the way that these cards are going to fall if I do raise my hand and go down that road. It could be a very calculated, very smart move. And if you're the attorney, if you're the uncle attorney taking the shit and they're allowed to do it, was that, do you think, more of just an opportunity on the part of the Goldberg family, of Sam and his uncle, where they're like, they're releasing the crime scene. And the uncle's like, let's get in there and get this shit out. I don't care what's on it,
right?
But let's just get it out.
We're not going to get anything out there that's going to be misconstrued, so let's go fucking grab it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
they weren't breaking the law doing anything.
No, they weren't. I mean,
that's the thing.
The crime scene was cleared. Like, the crime scene, by the time they went in, it had already been cleaned. You know,
were they just playing what made the most sense?
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, to be honest with you, I'd be doing the same fucking thing, you know, like as Sam and his family had done. I mean, if they're like, all right, they talked to me, you know, I gave them everything that I had in terms of what I knew, and they cleared the crime scene. And, at that point, I had a conversation with my family, and my family was of the mindset, look, because the way that this shakes down, the reality is it's either Sam or it's nobody else, you know, because the one thing that they'll have is the video from the apartment. If there was some strange person that walked in, like I've never heard anything about any other potential suspects. And granted, they've never done that investigation wherein they've dug into all the video, I'm assuming. But, you know, in the minds of law enforcement, you'd have to know that it's either going to be me or no one if you're Sam, right? You know, I mean, there's not going to be this nefarious lurking person that just sneaks into the building basically because there's that doorman there,
right?
You know, and there are 11 cameras in the building, even though sadly there's none in the hallway. You know, I mean, it's like those little things all kind of lead up to, I can see why they did what they did in order to protect Sam. And it was probably the smart move. And there was nothing at the time untoward of it. But when you look back on it, when you have the Greenberg family saying, okay, this is fucking bullshit. My daughter didn't kill herself. And they're fighting and fighting and fighting. And then you look back at everything in retrospect, that's when things start to seem hinky, you know. Yeah. But it's like you said, man, is there a world in which he didn't do this? Yeah, I mean, obviously there has to be. Like, I have to sit here with intellectual honesty and say, okay, well, I'm not a medical examiner. You know, I know that the thought of the way that she died with the injuries she sustained are implausible, but are they truly impossible? You know, I mean, I could take my arm and
they're doable.
They're doable. Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
They're physically impossible.
Yeah, but I don't know that they're
true.
Doable with what, 23 stab wounds? I could see maybe one or two.
Here's the reality of a lot of the stab wounds. Some of them are superficial.
Correct.
Some of them don't go very deep. Some certainly do. And then you get to the ones that are incapacitating, and then you get to new territory. But if we're to go by sheer, they're not all 23 are incapacitating stab wounds. Some are more like, you know, I could stab myself with this pen and go deeper. Yeah. So you do have some of that, but there are significant ones here.
Yeah.
That again, and then just the utter odds of this being that she did this to herself, which we talked about earlier, are insane.
Well, yeah. And the coagulated blood that accumulated at one of the sites too, that looked like it had to be postmortem. How is this possible? How is this possible? I want somebody with a medical degree to walk me through this.
Right. And so let me ask you guys, what did you have a psychologist or a psychiatrist on to talk about it?
Yeah, Siobhan was on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
All right. Psychotherapist.
So when you ask Siobhan, so when Ellen goes in her first appointment on 1/12/2011, and she describes this anxiety that she's got going on for a couple of months. I mean, to me, is anxiety the type of thing that kind of drives you towards suicide?
She filled up her gas tank that morning.
Right.
People who are going to unalive. Thank you. Yeah. Yes, I knew it was one of the words I'm not used to using. Yeah. We don't go in thinking, oh, I'm going to need gas in my car, especially if it's going to snow. I need to have a full tank. Right. We don't think like that.
Right.
That's not how you're thinking. You're not planning ahead. You are planning the end. People who are planning on ending their lives do not fill up their gas tanks.
But a lot of, I'll play the counter on that. A lot of times it is a very spur of the moment decision when it happens.
Exactly.
It isn't always I'm planning this out for months and today's the day. It's like, I'm doing this now and boom. But
she was a very meticulous person though. She was a planner. Everything she did was planning. This seems like such a weird twist of events for this woman who was so meticulous.
If she picked up a gun and did it, it would be questionable, but this makes the methism makes this insane.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that I think just drives everybody nuts about this case is the method in which she did it, because it's so unusual. It's just, it's not how women are typically going to unalive themselves. And here,
anyone.
I mean, but especially a woman.
Especially a woman. Yes. That's, we don't choose that route. Somebody brought up a point that she was making a fruit salad. I think that's an important feature as well.
It is.
You know, unless that's her last meal, but I can't imagine a fruit salad. It's going to be her last meal. You know, women are more like French fries, chocolate, and potato chips.
Stacy would pick a meat stick. I'm just going to throw that.
I think we're hearing much more about how Stacy would do this and what reality would be because we're hearing like, yes. I do a meat stick.
Well, we all talk about, well, my last meal would be, you know, if we are on death row or something. But
not necessarily right before I stab myself to death.
Well, and why is she going to clean the fruit?
Right.
I mean, there's so many things that are lining up here that don't make any sense. If you're going to unalive yourself, why even bother cleaning the fruit? Just eat
it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are things that simply don't add up. You know, I mean, when you kind of look at it, and again, when you're looking and I don't know if our audience has been able to read through this. And, you know, I also realize that when consumers of true crime are kind of sucked into a story, you're typically hearing a side, right? Mm-hmm. And then from that side, who may or may not be biased, you know, people are reaching their own conclusions based on the things that they've heard. So I'd recommend that everybody go out and read this thing for themselves. Everybody's going to come to the same conclusion. This thing really does read like a police report more than an ME's report. It's very, very heavy fact laden. Yes, they have the medical information in there, but in terms of trying to build their case that this was in fact a suicide, that's how the thing reads, man. It's like every single portion that isn't directly related to the findings from the autopsy, but it instead is facts of the case as they were able to glean them from what little investigation they did, is very, very much like, okay, this is why we think it's a suicide, not like a determination by an up and up ME. You know what I mean? It's like, It's like there you cannot look at this thing and be like, okay, somebody wasn't in this Emmy's ear saying, okay, the goal of this is to convince people that are convinced that Ellen did this or did not do this to herself and that Sam did this. You need to convince them with this report that that's not what happened. You know, I mean, that's how this thing reads.
It Which really is like does. Five people.
Right, right. It's like five people on the planet, you know, and, and it's a frustrating, confounding, and upsetting case in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I mean, Ellen's parents have just spent forever, you know, I mean, forever on this thing. We're going on 15 years fighting this, you know, because they want to, they really want to clear their daughter's name in terms of in her reputation. And it's important to them. You know, and obviously if somebody else did this, then they want that person held to account, you know? So, I mean, I get it. I imagine if the same thing had happened to me, the same horrible, horrible thing happened to one of my children, it would probably bug the shit out of me every day of my life. You know, I'd probably obsessively think about it and I'd probably obsess it. The fight would become the thing in my life. The fight would become, you know, what I wake up for every day, you know, like which is what it's become for him.
Yeah. I mean, her dad is, this is his mission. He talked about that in the doc, which I think is a very, interesting doc. One that went fairly scorched earth on the fiance far more than anyone has, in the past. I was really kind of surprised just how scorched earth it went. But again, innocent, never been charged, maintains his innocence. And that's Sam. We're talking about the Ellen Greenberg case, a new medical examiner's report, if that's what you want to call it, that has come out that basically says, we were right, la, 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 la. We don't want to hear anything anyone else has to say, and we're not changing anything. Thanks for your time. That's what we're discussing today. Bob Mata with his host of Defense Diaries. Bob, when I think a lot of people, you know, obviously, you are from the legal world, so you know what these things do look like. And as you just recently said, it reads much more like a police report than it does a medical report. I think a lot of people, especially true crimers out there who may not be as versed in this, are going, well, we were expecting much more of a medical-esque report. Yeah. But there are aspects that do bleed into to both of them to a certain aspect, but this one seemed to really go overboard in one direction. Why do you think it is that they're especially with no investigation, leaning into the facts of the investigation, which didn't exist to begin with? That, again, it just seems to be an insane overstep on something that didn't have a lot of data to begin with to base your medical opinions on, especially areas that have been proven to be false, falsely reported.
I mean, it's hard to know, man. It's like you kind of touched on it earlier. It's either something nefarious that somebody in, you know, high-ranking places is protecting somebody, or is it as simple as, you know, the police department botched this investigation so badly that, you know, they're worried about liability in terms of civil liability by the Greenberg family going in and saying, you fucked this thing up beyond all recognition and we're suing your ass, you know, and it turns out to be a big, you know, a big windfall for the Greenbergs and a big hit to, you know, the police,
which
department.
They are. Right. They are suing. And this report, and I want to talk about kind of what next steps are going to happen from here. This report basically does not reopen an investigation into this because it's stating it's still suicide. They would need to get undetermined or homicide as the cause of death for that door to be opened. It doesn't stop anything in the world of civil lawsuits, though, which is what is going on right now with the Greenbergs. They are suing the city of Philadelphia on this. And I believe there's another hearing, I think, today, technically on this, as we're recording this on the 14th. The fact that the report has come out and has said, we're right, you're wrong. How is that, if at all, is that going to affect the civil case going forward or any other litigation in terms of that's not criminally related?
Well, I would have to think that the civil suit is going to incorporate these shenanigans, at least in the eyes of the plaintiff, that have been going on with these medical examiners. You know, I mean, because the original guy flip-flopped, you know, and I mean, he like, you know, and that was, again, based on him getting different correct evidence in terms of the fact that the doorman didn't go up there, you know, and that he wasn't escorted, and that he was in the hallway that doesn't have cameras alone for a period of time. And now I've watched this video. Like, we did a live on Ellen's case probably about 6-8 months ago. And one of the things that we were looking at was I found a video of the way that you can open and engage that lock. And if you guys don't know what kind of lock, think of a hotel room. When you go to the hotel room, it's the lock that, yes, that guy right there, you know, and it's certainly not impossible, you know, but like, it would be really nice to know, like, you're not going to know how to do it probably without Googling it, which then again leads us back to Sam's devices. You know, like, if you find Sam looking up how to engage this type of lock, you know, from outside the door, you've got a smoking gun piece of evidence wherein you're going to trial on that thing, because there's no other reason other than him saying, oh, I'm going to, you know, I was just trying to get into the apartment because she wasn't answering and I didn't want to kick the door down. You know what I mean? Like, that would be the only plausible explanation that he could give.
Timing would be important on that. Did he look it up while he couldn't get in? Then you got a reason. It's like, okay, well, maybe. But if he's looking it up like before he goes to the gym, like, then that's a little weird. But again, that did not happen as far as we know. There's no evidence to that. But we will never know because those devices are all long gone. So when it comes down to this, I mean, do you think there is, if they were to truly dig into this with what they have left, with what exists of any evidence, which is, I don't know what exists, is there enough to try and go after anyone? And I'm not saying Sam, I'm saying anybody in general, or is it just so botched and that the pieces of this puzzle that you would need to complete it, you can't go buy another puzzle and fill in those pieces. They're just, it's gone. It's out of stock. It's destroyed. They're never making it again. And you're never going to find the answers to those questions without just complete guesswork.
I mean, if you are, well, let me ask this question. Have they, like, I know they've filed suit in order to get the, you know, another autopsy and to have the thing redone. And I know that they won on that.
That was part of the settlement.
Right. That was part of the settlement. So, in terms of, they haven't filed civil suit yet, have they?
It was settled. The civil suits were settled.
That was a different thing. So if you're trying to bring a wrongful death suit, which I don't think, the wrongful death suit would have to be against Sam's family.
Which has not happened, yes.
Which has not happened, but you know, the thing about a civil suit is it's a much lower burden. It's preponderance of the evidence as opposed to beyond a reasonable doubt. So the way that I always, they might win that. They might. I mean, it's like probably the prime example of that is OJ, right? So OJ was acquitted in the criminal courts, and then the Goldbergs and Nicole's family sued him civilly, and they won that civil lawsuit, you know, and it was for wrongful death. So the wrongful death lawsuit found him to be liable, you know, that's, and they got a huge monetary reward award in that. And, you know, I don't know that he ever paid out. I think I watched something recently and the Goldberg family was like, nah, he never paid shit, you know, but like for them, it was a win because they wanted OJ to be walking around with that cloud of guilt over him. So, I mean, if I'm the Greenbergs, I'm like, okay, well, you're suing Sam's family, and this is all theoretical. Like,
this is not happening.
Right, this is not happening. So, you know, and I'm suing the police department. I'm suing the medical examiner's department, you know, and I'm going after the city. So, but you know, you have problems with that. You know, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to sue the government. It just is. And without kind of smoking gun evidence in terms of why or who is kind of guiding this ship from up on high to have it land the way it's landing, it's hard, man. Because it's like incompetent police work is tough to win on because it's just it happens all the time, you know. And ultimately, I mean, I think that they're going to feel like it's worth taking the shot. You know,
do you think that they have talked to somebody about doing this and maybe were told, don't do it, don't pursue this?
Yeah, I'm sure that there's been plenty of lawyers that they've spoken with. But, you know, I think that the guy that filed the most recent one that resulted in this settlement, I mean, he's pretty adamant, right? I mean, like, that would be your guy. Because you're going to get a civil attorney. Remember, you know, I hate to make civil law sound like what it is, but it's a money grab. You know, I mean, and civil attorneys who typically, in most civil cases, take cases on a contingency basis, which means they front all the costs for civil litigation, which can be very, very costly. You know, in a case like this, you know, you'd have to get a bunch of experts. You'd have to really do a ton of depositions. It would be heavy duty litigation, you know, and you'd be deposing everybody and, you know, trying to get access to records that probably no longer exist, you know. And I imagine that there'd be a fair amount of civil attorneys that'd be like, man, I really want to help you here. But the fact of the matter is I don't know that there's an end game where I end up recouping my money. So, you know, the other alternative is you do a hybrid fee agreement wherein you say, okay, well, I'm going to need you to cover all the costs of the suit and maybe pay me some hourly. And then if we recover, I'll get a smaller percentage than I normally would, which would typically be a third. Mm-hmm. If it's settled, and then, you know, if you have to go to trial, it's typically around 40%. I've seen it higher, but it's tough. It's a tough thing. You'd have to find that lawyer who was like completely with you, you know, and that maybe they're willing to sacrifice some money and some time, kind of like the concept of pro bono lawyers in, you know, the defense side of it. You know, you get people that want to help somebody. I mean, it's kind of like that thing. Cause it's just not an open and shut case, you know, even with that lower burden, it's a tough case from the civil side of it. Cause first you have to show liability. And then once you can establish there was liability, it's like a two-part trial really. So there's a liability side and then the damages side, which is the money side. And I would imagine the Greenbergs don't give a shit about the money. You know, this is all about,
They said they don't.
Here's where it's sitting right now to clarify, because this is, I mean, we've been following this thing, you know, for a very long time, and it's still confusing to us because there's so many moving parts in this. The wrongful death case filed by Ellen Greenberg's parents, it remains open in part, but it has been severely limited by procedural rulings, statute of limitation concerns, and the city's legal defenses. In 2019, the Greenberg family filed a civil lawsuit in Philadelphia Common Pleas Court against the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office, Dr. Marlon Osborne, the original pathologist, and other city officials. That's the lawsuit that challenged the 2011 reclassification of Ellen's manner of death from homicide to suicide. Right. They allege gross negligence and a failure to properly investigate. In 2021, the Greenbergs expanded their efforts by seeking declaratory and injunctive relief, essentially asking the court to force the city to change Ellen's death certificate back to undetermined or homicide. That claim was rejected on the grounds that courts cannot override a medical examiner's professional opinion, even if the family disagrees with it. In 2023,
The Commonwealth Court of Pennsylvania upheld that position on appeal, ruling that the family lacks standing to compel a change in the death certificate and that doing so would violate separation of powers principles. The court also noted that Pennsylvania's statute of limitations for wrongful death claims is 2 years. And because Ellen died in 2011, a traditional wrongful death claim against third parties may now be time barred unless newly discovered evidence creates an exception, which hasn't been formally accepted as of now. Then in February 25, the Greenberg family reached that partial settlement with the city of Philadelphia, and that agreement included what we just saw, the financial settlement. We don't know the number on that. It's been reports of around $650,000, but that's, we don't know. The city's promise, and this is it, the city's promise to conduct a new independent review of Ellen's death. That's what we're talking about. That's the review that we just went through. However, the family has since filed a motion to enforce that settlement, claiming that the city has failed to involve them or their experts and that the review process lacked transparency. A judge ordered the city to complete the reexamination by today, literally the 14th, as of us are recording this. And then just yesterday, we saw the report come out. So as of now, the underlying civil case is not fully dismissed, but certain claims, especially those tied to the death certificate, changes and specific officials have been thrown out or narrowed. The family's path forward is going to depend on how the courts rule on their motion to enforce the settlement and whether they can legally challenge the findings of the Simon review in light of the agreement. No individuals obviously have been charged or publicly named as a suspect in Ellen Greenberg's death. So that's where
procedurally it lays. So, I mean, I think that this thing was the result of the settlement, right? So, because they slow played this thing and they were getting pissed off. They're like, why hasn't this been turned over? We're expecting this. And the court agreed with them, said, get it done. Like, that's it. Like, this is some bullshit. And so they got it done. So, and I saw, and I don't know if it's Gene or Jeannie Bloom had asked, statute of limitations that shouldn't be if it was possibly a murder. So Jeannie or Gene, I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name, but here's what you have to remember. There's no statute of limitations on murder in the criminal world. There is a statute of limitations in the civil world. So you have to bring a civil suit for this type of wrongful death claim, as Tony was saying, in 2 years. It's the same in Illinois. And unless you find newly discovered evidence or, it's something that you couldn't have discovered until the time that you discovered it.
Okay. Let me ask you about newly discovered evidence, because there has been some new pieces that we've learned in the last handful of, in the last year, really, the security guard, the claim that's on one of the reports that Sam says that the security guard came up and watched him break down the door, basically. Yeah. Not true. That did not happen.
Right.
The security guard said, no, never happened. In the documentary, he's come out going, you know, I don't know what happened, but I don't want to be represented in a way of something that did not take place.
Yeah.
So newly discovered evidence, Bob? I don't know.
From the plaintiff's position, yes. Depending on when he finally came clean, in terms of like he may not have even known.
He didn't know. That's the thing. Right. He wasn't lying. Nobody came and asked him. It was Brian Enton that tracked him down a couple months ago and like asked him the question, because for whatever reason, nobody had done that yet.
Yeah, I would argue that is absolutely newly discovered. You can't impute the incompetence of the police by never asking that question the doorman onto a victim, potentially of a homicide, and their family. So, and in terms of the civil lawsuit, maybe if you're the government, you're arguing, okay, well, in terms of their investigation, and I'm talking about, you know, Ellen's family and them hiring a private investigator and going out and saying, okay, look, I need you to go talk to this fucking doorman and tell me what exactly everything he saw, you know, because, like, frankly, that would probably be the first person that I would talk to.
Mm-hmm.
you know, if I were a private investigator working for the Green Party, it shouldn't have had to have been Brian Enten.
Yeah.
You know, it should have been somebody who was like, okay, well, you know, there's this whole story out there that Sam claims the doorman was up with him when he kicked the door in. Let's go talk to him. You know what I mean? So, like, and again, I'm like, Tony and I during this episode have just been devil's advocating. I think both of us are, you know, I'm pretty convinced that this was a homicide. You know, like that's where I lay on it. But I certainly, if put, you know, my feet are put to the fire, I can argue on the other side of it. You know, because I think that there's enough there. So, but in terms of that not taking place, that might be a winning argument for the government in terms of that being considered newly discovered evidence, because everybody knew that guy existed. You know what I'm saying? And it was merely a conversation. And if you watched the documentary, he was a very forthright guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like he was kind of unwittingly sucked into this thing as being essentially Sam's alibi.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you're to look at Sam as the culprit here, I mean, the doorman was the guy. Well, I was there. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that Sam couldn't have gone up. And if he figured out this lock trick that we could Google right now, it's right there for you. It takes like,
it
takes like a minute to do the thing. And it's like one or two tools or something. It's not even tools. It's like a fucking piece of string. And, you know, it's like
you could do it. It's doable.
It can be done. Yeah. It can be done. I actually wanted to, if I had that type of lock, I would have tried it.
I've done it.
Did it, like, how easy
was it? It's doable. It's not hard.
How long did it take you? Did you time it?
I tried doing this a lot. This was like before I even knew about the damn case. I was curious because I had one of those in my apartment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wonder how this would work. You know, I'm like, I'm just curious. And I fucked around. I don't remember, like, because it was years ago.
Right.
I think I used like, I don't know, a stick or just something that I could throw in that I could kind of manipulate it with. And it's doable.
Yeah.
You don't have to even do it the exact YouTube. There's ways of doing this. There's ways of getting past a lock like that. It's not an impossible task.
Right. It's not a deadbolt.
No, and clearly it wasn't ripped out of the wall either.
No,
So it's not an impossible. And here's the thing, you know, we do see the damage on that the door on the latch piece, very minimal damage. Sam has not been charged with anything. He's innocent, as far as we are aware. You could do this from the inside too, if you wanted to make it look like you really did this, that you really had to coax that thing open. You simply shut the latch and then you start jerking on the door and you'll
take
get
a hammer and
100%.
You'll get the exact same results.
Exact same results.
It doesn't mean he's on the other side kicking the thing open. It means somebody's trying to make this look like something happened. Right. Now, I'm not saying that's what he did, but I'm saying it could be. And we don't know the answer to it because we already now have a piece of evidence over here that says, he said the doorman was up there with him.
And why was he lying?
That's not true.
I want to know why he lied about this.
Well, I want to ask this question too. I'm going to play devil's advocate because the police already effed up 50 other things in this. Who's to say they didn't eff up that part of the note taking too?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I hate that, but
who's to say? Because it's only in one report. It's not in all of them. Yeah. Who's to say that doorman, you know, when it was being written, there weren't, you know, intermingling things in their mind of, well, the doorman, because they did eventually they did talk to the doorman while this was happening.
Right.
Why? So if I'm wondering if it was Sam said that the doorman was up there, or just one of the officers conflated it as, well, they're here together right now. They must have been here together when this happened. Doorman was there while this was happening.
Sam says it, and the cop just assumes because it's the doorman and there's a person locked out of their apartment that the doorman, like, it was an assumption thing that the doorman would have escorted him up there. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
And then it looks, again, that's another piece of evidence that looks like absolute shit on the cops. Because it's just incompetence running wild. And it's a mistake, yes, but it's also a very key mistake in a very important life or death investigation of someone as to what happened to them. And you wouldn't want that exposure now, would you?
No, not at all. And, you know, I think from the perspective of the concept that maybe Sam did this. And just to understand, like, Tony and I and Stacey aren't trying to get sued here. So when we speak carefully about this out there, don't glean anything from it.
No, we're not saying he did this by any means. This is conjecture of the conversation.
Right, right, exactly. So I just want to always say that. It's kind of like a disclaimer, right? Mm-hmm. We always put a disclaimer when we're talking about a case like this. So, you know, but in my world, if Sam's the guy, it happened exactly the way that you said, is that whatever took place, now it's bizarre to think that he would have gone down and worked out after he had done this, but it seems to be that would have to be the case. But in my world, there is no opening that lock from the outside. It's he went back into the apartment, he engaged the lock, and he did exactly what he said. Just pulled it really hard, to get it to make it look like he had to get into the apartment by kicking the thing in. So, you know, because that's the easiest way to do that, right? Where you give it this look that, I had to kick the door in, because who's going to say that you're wrong? Because if I'm stuck out in the hallway for an hour and my wife is in there, and I know that they're not married at that point yet, but I'm screaming at her. I'm like, what the fuck, Allison? What the fuck? Pounding on the door to where neighbors, like all of the neighbors that are home, which I'm assuming was a majority of them with the storm, bearing down.
Oh, yeah, they're all snowed in.
Right, they're all snowed in, are coming out and poking their heads out into the hallway.
Other people helping, too? Because this is his person, and she's not responding. He should have been fucking frantic.
Right.
And he took an hour to get into the damn apartment. And there's two ways of looking at this. And when I was watching the documentary, I thought it did a really interesting way. Here's what I gleaned out of it was he made a big scene. The hour prior trying to get in, he talked to the doorman. He talked to some other people. He made it aware. He made others aware that he could not get into his apartment and he was going to effing break the door down. I believe that's what the quote was, or something of that nature, to the doorman, because the doorman could not leave his post to go help. By law, the only thing he could, or by the building standards, the only thing he could do was if the police came, that he could move and leave his post.
Well, and some people in our chat said
he didn't leave until then. So that being the fact, Sam did make a scene. Now you could look at it two ways. Was Sam making a scene so it looked like he was concerned and he was trying to get in, and so others would be aware? Or was that Sam just being genuinely a human being that's concerned and trying to get in, but not thinking the gravity of the situation was where it was, that maybe she's asleep, maybe she, whatever, maybe there's a way to get back into this apartment without causing damage to the apartment.
Then why didn't he call the authorities versus his family? Because if I'm frantic and I can't get to my person, and God forbid they're, having cardiac arrest and are on the kitchen floor, I'm going to call the authorities. I need help getting in there. I'm not going to call family and set my alibi.
No, and that's the other part of it. That's the part, then you add that aspect in. So you have all these things that could make logical sense and how a human being would react. Why you'd be calling your attorney uncle when your door is locked and you can't get... It doesn't seem to be time to call your attorney uncle. Like, the door is locked. I'm not quite sure why I'm not able to get in. I would think, I don't know, I'd be calling a locksmith or something. I know someone.
I'm not calling familial
backup.
I have a real world example of this. Now, Allie wasn't inside the apartment, but I had gone down to the Jersey Shore, and my in-laws have a condo down there. So I had taken, it was around Father's Day. It was 2 years ago. I get down there. It's a building. There's a doorman down there. It's pretty well regulated in terms of, there's always somebody down there. I get upstairs, I have the key, and I open it and the door won't open. I can't get it open. I'm like, what the fuck, man? So my first call. Now, again, I don't have my loved one in there. Right. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been gone for an hour. Because I would have done the same thing. I would have pounded on the door. And in that situation, remember, the door opens about 2 inches. Mm-hmm. So Sam, in theory, to kind of to put away with the concept that he couldn't have woken her up. Like, I'd be yelling if I thought that she had fallen asleep. I'd be like, yelling through. Are you wake up? You asleep? What the fuck? I'm stuck out here. You know, I'd be getting increasingly irritated. So in my situation, I call my in-laws right away. And I'm like, because my first thought is, I don't want to break this door. It's like, I think it seems like it's stuck just enough to where I could probably do a shoulder bump pretty hard and get the thing open, because mm-hmm. they didn't have, it wasn't the flipper lock thing. It was like something was stopping the door from opening. I'm like, what? I'm like, is there something behind the door? It was really weird. So ultimately I go down and I ask the people in the building, I'm like, you know, what should I do with this? And they're like, you should probably call a locksmith. So the building wasn't taking any kind of responsibility, because they are condos, right? Mm-hmm. You have ownership. It's your responsibility for, and I think that they would consider the door to be your property. Okay. And so ultimately I call my in-laws back. I'm like, they're saying you got to call like a locksmith, man. So I wait, the locksmith comes, he can't get it open. And then ultimately, you know, we have to ask my in-laws, we're like, can we just like kind of, you know, can you bar the door? Can we just, you know, shoulder this thing or kick it open? And ultimately they were like, yeah. And it turned out it was like the screw from the plate had like over time worked its way out to the point where it was stopping the door from opening. So mm-hmm. the plate where the lock goes in, you know, one of those screws had popped out or had like worked its way out. So, you know, in this situation, I just think that ultimately it's never not going to be suspicious.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's never not going to be, because of all the things that we've been talking about, you know, the untimely, bizarre phone call to the uncle when he can't do shit for you. You know, the fact of the matter that nobody's up there and Sam lies about having the doorman with him. I mean, to me, that's the thing that bugs me more than anything else. And I disagree, Illuminating Inc. I do think it's bizarre. I mean, unless you've murdered somebody or unalived somebody, like how you would respond after that type of event is something that you won't know until you've done it. Now, I've been practicing criminal law for a long time, and to just say, oh yeah, no, I don't think it's weird at all. You know, this guy just committed a brutal murder or unaliving and went down to the gym and worked out for an hour pretending. I think it's, you know, I understand obviously the concept of wanting to create an alibi, but it's still it's a weird, very weird thing to do. Like
it holds everything.
Sam's perspective. Yeah.
The thing is, the whole case, if you were to go from did he have something to do with this, a lot of it doesn't make sense. Like why you know I could see there being an accident. I don't think it doesn't strike me as a brutal murdering type individual. You know, but again, a cover up of an accident, is that going on, or is it a cover up of just really horrible police work? Or at the end of the day, did she do it? Is she the 0.001% that does unalive herself by stabbing? And it is what it is.
I was trying.
And nobody wants to believe it because it looks really freaking weird. And that's why we're talking about it right now.
Right. And I like the fact that we're trying to test both sides of it, you know, because it's become a very one-sided conversation. And I understand why. And I'm not in disagreement with it being a one-sided conversation, but if you're being intellectually honest, you have to test the propositions that each side is putting forward. And, you know, I mean, for me, I ultimately land on the fact that I don't think that she unalived herself. I just think that there's too many strange things, and it upsets me that law enforcement didn't do a real investigation here. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's never going to not be the case. I mean, they fucked it up. And
if we could just get a, let's look at this, let's truly investigate this and come to our conclusions, not bureaucratic bullshit.
Right.
Because that's all we keep getting.
Which is what it feels like. You know,
it's what it is.
Yeah. And it's like, and you're never getting a good answer from somebody on the bureaucracy side as to why.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you've got state's attorneys or district attorneys. I forget what they call them out in Philly, but, you know, you've got them just not giving sufficient answers as to why, like they're just leaning on the determination by the medical examiner. They're not, you know what I mean? They're not giving a full explanation. I mean, if it were me, if I was elected the lead prosecuting attorney in the city of Philadelphia, I would say, you know, here's what we're going to do. Like, I know what's going on with this thing, but we're going to reinvestigate it one more time. We're going to reopen it up. We're going to do as full of an investigation as we can with what we have, whatever evidence that we were able to gather in our limited investigation on the front side of it. And we're going to dig in deep and we're going to, so that way, at least I can come up with, even if it's a mea culpa wherein I'm saying, you know what, sadly, mistakes were made on the front end in terms of the initial investigation, in terms of preservation of the crime scene. We fucked it up. You know, we fucked it up and at least own it, because that way it creates at least something in the minds of the Greenbergs that are like, okay, somebody at least tried to fucking do something, you know, instead of just sitting here and passing the buck one person after another, you know, hot potatoing this thing all over the place and no one wants to step up.
Yeah, they're waiting them out. They're waiting the Greenbergs out to die.
It's the way it seems, dude. It really does.
I mean, and at the end of the day, yes, would it bring some closure for that family? Would it be the right thing to do? Sure, but the right thing is also going to cost them a lot of money if they were to come out and say, we really fucked this up. Because I don't think there's necessarily a world that exists where it's like, we really fucked this up, and now we're not going to be remotely liable for anything we screwed up here.
Yeah.
So it's you know, there's always going to be that way. Not right.
How thick are the walls in this place?
Is anybody ever?
No, I mean, seriously, we're talking about, like, this is, you know, we've all, if you've seen the documentary, you've seen.
Yeah.
It's a hallway that's much like a hotel hallway. So you're going to be sharing. I would have to think that if Sam had done this, that Ellen would have been screaming at some point.
You'd think.
With like this many knife injuries and knife wounds.
I would think if she's doing it herself, she'd be screaming at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know. Like, I don't know,
Bob,
about this.
I burned myself on the oven last night.
But that's not intentional. You know what I mean? Like, if you've decided to do something and you're adamant about doing it, I don't know. Like, I honestly, I'm not going to die on the hill. I get what you're saying. Sure. I mean, when you injure yourself, like, out of the blue, your initial instinct is like, ah, you know, I mean, you're going to do that. If you're of the mindset, like, are women, like, if somebody's slitting their wrists, are they screaming? I don't think so. I don't know. You know, I don't know. But to me, it just seems with that amount of violence that there would have been some kind of ruckus, that somebody would have, somebody would have heard something in that apartment. And I don't know if that was ever investigated. I don't know if anybody ever went and talked to all the neighbors at length. I'm sure somebody did. They had to have. You know,
did
but
they?
I don't know.
It literally took how many years to get the doorman to say, yeah, I wasn't there.
Right. I mean, it's fucking insane. I don't know.
There's so many questions on this. I mean, it's insane. So there we go. Another brick wall for the Greenbergs and anybody interested in justice. I think we all kind of knew it was going to end here, though. Nobody expected. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right, guys. We really screwed this up. Let me give you the real report. It's been sitting under Lenny's desk the last 14 years. Yeah. Just found it. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not how it works.
Before you end it, I'm sorry, man. Like, the next time you have Siobhan on, ask her in terms of the medication she was taking, because that's always an X factor for me.
Yeah.
All right. So that's always an X factor in terms of, like, I see what they are. I know that the clozapine is like kind of it's an anti-anxiety. I don't know what the other one is. I haven't Googled it.
They're very common. Everything that she was taking was very common. I mean, honest to God, a lot of it's like things I've taken over the years,
yeah,
or many of us have. And it's like,
Are either of them psychotropic, though? Like, are either
I don't
of
know
them,
off the top of my head.
How do they interact with one another? Is it, you know, it's like I always want to look at medications that people are taking because I don't trust big pharma. You know what I'm saying?
But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, could anything, you know, be possible? Yes. You know, it's kind of the, if you're allergic to this medication, don't take this medication.
Oh, right. It may cause your testicles to fall off, that kind of thing.
I think they can do anything technically, but was this some sort of dramatic interaction of drugs that would have been standout? No. It was not. It was very common.
Or something that you would have seen a buildup from. Because it's like there's a case that I'm going to be relooking at, and it's a horrific case, and it's an Illinois case, and it's a family annihilator case. And it came out after Christopher Vaughn was tried, and he was seen as the absolute monster because he was convicted of killing his wife and his three kids in the car. And it came out that she was taking this Topamax, which came out
I've
a little
taken
bit
that of, for migraines.
Yeah. And, you know, it came out after the trial, just how differently the wife was acting leading up to the day that they were taking this drive to this water park. And, you know, and that was one of those cases where Chris, you know, had been to a strip club and had spent money there. And they like, so they had him pegged as this, you know, this scumbag who had done this, when the reality in that case very well could have been, because it's like there was no black box warning on that FDA warning at the time she was taking it, that it does give people suicidal ideation, which is hand in hand with homicidal ideation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's just like, I always kind of look at the scripts that people are taking because it's an important element of you know, any investigation, I would think. But it's a sad case, man. It really, really is. It's just all around. And I know, like, and I want to finish on this. I know we've gone long, but like the concept of it's frustrating for people because Sam's never come out and said shit other than, you know, make this kind of bold proclamation about mental illness and mental health and how important it is, you know? So it makes it seem like he's just leaned onto that thing and has never really had a full discussion, which.
But if you were Sam and you had nothing to do with it, would you say anything?
I don't know. It depends. It depends. Are my kids like, cause he's married with kids now. Are my kids walking around in fucking school after the Hulu thing dropped? Like, oh, yeah, your dad's a fucking killer.
I know. I mean, at the end of the day, is there, I guess that's my, I'll ask this last question. At the end of the day, is there any positive, let's assume as things are standing right now, that Sam had nothing to do with this. But there's obviously this scuttlebutt now, even more with the Hulu thing going on, you know, about what if?
Yeah.
Does it benefit him in any way, shape, or form to say jack shit about this other than mental health awareness is important and crises can happen, like he has said in the past a few times? Does it benefit him to say anything about anything whatsoever in this, or does that all just 1,000% open him up to legal liability, or number two, just more people going down the rabbit hole and speculating that he had something to do with it? I don't know that he can say anything benefits him other than just like let it flow, let it the dust settle. You saying shit just flings it back up.
Right. I mean, I think you're right, because ultimately he's not going to have answers for some of the questions.
And if
first
he
question I'm answering, like, why did you lie about the doorman coming up with you? Is the first thing I'm asking him.
Yeah, you know, and like, the answer, like, maybe I didn't. They misconstrued it.
Right, which would have proved his answer. Right.
Yeah. Which, based on all the other screw ups, seems like a fairly plausible explanation, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. Yeah, I feel terrible for the Greenberg family. It's just, it seems like it's one of those things that they may never get an answer. And just one of those cases, man, that will always be unsolved or just kind of lay where it's lying and they'll never get any kind of true answer, which is just sad. It's sad.
It is. It is. Bob Mata, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Get it wherever you get podcasts and check out his YouTube channel. Be sure to do that. For Stacy, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. Be sure to let us know your thoughts in the comments section and be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.